This is the Beer of the Day podcast.
From Beer of the Day World Headquarters in Elk Grove, California. It's episode number 75 of the Beer of the Day podcast. Tonight's episode is entitled The Gold Standard, and we have five different gold-themed beers to try. Plus, I tried the fifth Yingling lager I've ever had in my life and compare it to some other of the biggest selling beers out on the market. My name is Dallas Helliker. Joining me tonight, Jeff Miller from Pasadena. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. It's been a while since we've done one of these shows. Probably close to a month since we recorded one. It's been a busy summer, a lot of trips. I went to Canada fishing. Last weekend I was down in Pasadena visiting you. So we've been up and around and every which way, and it's good to be back here on the show.
Now everybody's tired. It's just us tonight.
I know, but we're the troopers. You know, we'll hang in there and get the job done.
It was probably not a show where we could do 9 or 10 beers, but I think we got a good lineup tonight.
We do, all gold themed. And we'll get to those, but as usual, we'll start out with the interesting beers. I know you had one to mention.
I did. And so you had this beer also, but I had the Melrose Double Dry Hopped IPA from Beechwood, which is down here in Southern California in Long Beach. And really delicious. I mean, Melrose, the regular one, is one of my favorite LA area beers by far. I mean, it's just pure West Coast style, which is great with so many hazy IPAs out there right now. So I had the Double Dry Hopped that just came out, I think about a week ago, super fresh. When Dallas was down here, we got a bottle and it was good. And I went back and got another bottle a couple days ago. Really tasty.
It was the first beer Jeff gave me when I walked in the door. And this beer poured as clear, the clarity on this beer is top notch. Like, there's no clearer beer than this.
Yeah, and it's, you know, Melrose, the regular one, is just, it's kind of a special beer. It's not readily available. It's not, you know, always on tap or anything like that. And so when they came out with this, it was kind of a special treat. It reminded me a lot of Pseudo Sioux. Not in terms of the flavor, but, you know, we had the Pseudo Sioux, which is a good beer from Toppling Goliath. And then we had the Double Dry Hopped Pseudo Sioux. And that was just so amazing in comparison to the regular one. I see a lot of similarities between the Melrose and the Double Dry Hopped Melrose. So it's still available, at least in the LA area. I would highly recommend this beer if you can find it.
Definitely. All right, well, let's get into the first golden beer of the night. This one is called Glitter and Gold. It's a beer de mille, is the style of beer, which is basically a honey beer, and it's from Perennial Artesian Ales from St. Louis, Missouri. I'm going to open up my own beer tonight.
You're going to be busy there. You got to do everything in your end.
Yeah, I got to manage the recording and play all these sounds and music and pour the beer, drink the beer. It's a busy night. That's why I get paid the big bucks.
So this beer is very clear in color. I didn't really know what to expect. This is our first beer of this style that I'm sure we've ever had on the podcast. It's super clear, like a light golden color, pretty thin, white, kind of frothy head.
Yeah. Quite clear, small little stream of champagne-like bubbles floating up. On the aroma, I get a little bit of a corn type of malt, and then I get some of the farmhouse yeast, like a saison.
Yeah, like the Belgian yeast.
And Belgian, yeah, for sure. And then I'm trying to detect honey. There's a little sweetness. I wouldn't categorize it as honey.
There's a lot going on in this aroma. I mean, it's super aromatic. I think I get some fruit also. I mean, it smells cold, if that makes sense. Like when you just smell it, it smells like crisp and cold. Some fruit, maybe like apple or pear. Very inviting.
Wow. Now, incredibly interesting flavor. I don't think there's a beer like this anywhere. It is the consistency or the texture of the beer is unusual. Like the way the carbonation hits the tongue or something. It's not a style that I'm used to. I get that bready honey sweetness. And then as I was taking a sip, you were talking about the fruit flavors, like the apple. And I did get a fair amount of that as well.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, this is a different style for us. It's kind of like a Saison, but different. Like you were saying, like the mouthfeel or the texture, it almost has like a creamy texture to it, which is not what I was expecting for something that's a pretty light beer. There's a little bit of that funk like you would get in like, you know, a farmhouse ale. I think you mentioned that just a little bit, not a lot. But I really get the fruit, the pear and the apple with the bready graininess up front.
And there's kind of the aftertaste is not, it lingers on quite a while, but it's not an intense aftertaste. It's a very mild, airy kind of aftertaste that is present but not dominating. And it doesn't overstay its welcome, but it certainly does stick around for a while.
And the honey is pretty sweet, but light. And I think you mentioned just being able to get very little of it in the aroma. There's not a lot of honey here. When it's advertised as a Belgian style ale brewed with honey, I mean, out of all the flavors we're sort of mentioning, honey is one of the more mellow ones.
It is.
But there's some there on the back end for sure.
You know, when you take a sip of beer and you taste quality, and I get that from this one. A lot of times you'll take a sip of beer and there will be some aspect to it that is not appealing to your palate. Either the aftertaste is a little too bitter, or the beer is a little too sweet, or some aspect of the beer, the hops or the malts or something dominates and the other one isn't strong enough. This one has the balance and it has the quality of, I cannot name anything that I would do better with this beer.
I agree. It's really perfect. It's not a hoppy beer. You know, we're big hop fans, but you know, this is just quality. There's nothing I would change with this beer. It's really great. This is a beer that I brought back from a trip to St. Louis. Must have been earlier this year. Dallas and I were in St. Louis about a year ago, and we went to a bunch of breweries, but it was our first time there. And, you know, we do some research ahead of time, and we went to places that we knew of that we thought would be good. And like on the last day, everybody's telling us, oh, you got to go to Perennial. And we just ran out of time. We had to go leave town, did not have a chance to go. So I made a point next time I was there about a year later to specifically go back to this brewery. So I went there. Had a tasting of a bunch of beers, had some food. They do have food at this brewery, and brought back a couple of bottles, and this is one of them. So I'm very pleased because it's a big bottle, which these are not the easiest to bring back on the plane. And I had to bring back, you know, two bottles of everything, and I'm happy I brought this one back.
Yeah, two points. First is I am disappointed now that Britton and Joel are not here, because I guarantee both of them would really appreciate this beer. And this is a quality beer that I don't think you come across it too often. It reminds me of beers that we had when we were in Belgium. It's like Belgium is, you know, one of those beer hubs of the world that is just unmatched anywhere else. And we were so spoiled. We had so many quality beers there. And this just kind of brings me right back, where it's one of those beers you can taste the quality and you can't pick anything out that is offensive about the beer. It's just so well done. Anything else?
No, but I wish I had another bottle.
Yeah, me too. And now let's get into the beer news of the day. So we got a lot of news to cover today. As I said, it's been a little while since the last show, but it doesn't matter because all this news came out within the past week. And even today, I have some sound clips I'll be playing that came out today as we're recording this on June 30th. So the Brewers Association, which is the organization, it's in Colorado, and it basically represents... It's like a guild that represents all the craft breweries in the country. And it basically is around to support craft beer. And it has recently taken a stand against the breweries that have been bought out by big beer. And to do this, it is basically created a label. And it's an upside down bottle. That's dark, and it says Independent Craft Brewers Association certified around it. And this logo can be applied by anybody. It's free to use, and any craft brewery can apply this label to their bottle, to their signage, to their tap handles, wherever they want to use this, on the boxes, growlers, whatever they want. They can use this thing and this logo, and the logo lets people know that this is actually a craft brewery and not a craft brewery that's been bought out by Anheuser-Busch and is posing as a craft brewery. So there's a lot of different opinions on this, but basically the definition in which you can use this is that you are annually producing less than 6 million barrels of beer, and you have no more than 25% ownership in outside hands. So that's the definition for craft that allows a brewery to use this logo. So this definition embraces more than 5,300 breweries around the country. And within 90 minutes of the program's announcement, more than 200 breweries had downloaded the labels. So I think we will start seeing this on bottles and boxes and stuff. And I think it's kind of just a way for craft beer to kind of show unity to those that haven't sold out.
I think this is great. Like when I saw this news come out, it made me think of, you know, why wasn't this out already? It seems obvious now that this probably should have been there. You know, it's a little bit of a lobbying effort. But I think it's good because I think it's very confusing to the consumer these days, you know, who owns what, who makes certain beers. We're very well educated in the craft beer world, and we have a hard time keeping up with who's bought out who and who owns whatever. I mean, the reality is craft beer world has been on a huge growth, spurt for years. And there's been a lot of mergers and buyouts, you know, however you call it. And, you know, the big non-craft brewers are intentionally not advertising the fact that they own some of these smaller places. So I think this is good for the consumer because it will add a lot of clarity that I think adds value to those that are buying this beer.
Right. And it says, you know, a whole slew of mid-sized operations that rely on outside funding likely won't be able to make the cut. Like Founders with funding from a private equity firm, Cigar City, also funded by private equity, Alma Gang, Boulevard, Firestone Walker, all partially owned by Duval, all partially owned by Duval, are not considered craft by the Brewers Association. Beer lovers are interested in transparency when it comes to brewery ownership, says Bob Peace, Brewers Association president and CEO. This seal is a simple way to provide that clarity. Now they can know what's being brewed small and certified independent. Allagash founder and BA board member Rob Todd agrees. When beer lovers buy independent craft beer, they are supporting American entrepreneurs and the risk takers who have long strived not just to be innovative and make truly great beer, but to also build culture and community in the process. So look out for the packaging materials with this logo. Now, just today, on June 30th, Anheuser-Busch has a group called the High End. And the High End is basically a conglomerate of all the breweries that Anheuser-Busch has bought. Elysian, Wicked Weed, they bought recently, 10 Barrel, Four Peaks, Devil's Backbone. They've bought a bunch of breweries and let the brewery continue their operation, but then they expand their distribution. They allow that to take up shelf space, and they use these craft breweries that they have purchased a majority share in to compete with the smaller independent craft breweries. So today they released this video, and I had the sound clips for it, and I'll play what they have to say. This is their rebuttal to the Brewers Association's new label that they came out with. This is David Bueller of Elysian.
You know, when I saw the new logo, I had a few thoughts. One was, what would I do? You know, because it's about my brewery and my people. And as a team of graphic designers and packaging on that side of the business of what we do, I thought, how would I use it? Would I use it? And what are the decisions that other breweries across the country doing right now looking at this logo? Is this logo a mandate for brewers to put on their labels that are not part of big beer? Does this logo designate something like quality? Does it differentiate anything about what the beer is or how the beer is perceived by the consumer, right? Because it's all about the consumer. The consumer is what drives our businesses, right?
That's right. My rebuttal to that is it's not saying anything about the quality of the beer inside the packaging. It's just letting you know that that beer was not brewed by in conjunction with Big Beer, who has an active interest in stopping the spread of the smaller craft beer industry. And they have all kinds of policies, that some of which they've gotten in trouble for and some of which they've taken heat for, that is detrimental to the small guy.
I think what's tough for me is, like, I agree with this in principle, and I'm very supportive of the small independent brewery. I love going to different, you know, traveling, going to different places and trying the local beers. But there are some good breweries that we really like that don't qualify under this rule. I mean, you mentioned earlier Firestone, Founders, Cigar City, Omegang. Those are all good breweries. I mean, we're not opposed to those breweries. But they are partially owned by outsiders, and so they're sort of out of this, and that's sort of the hard part for me. But it is just a nice way to sort of know who truly is independent.
Because a lot of times there's no way to know.
Exactly.
All right. This is from Walt Dickinson of Wicked Weed, who was purchased just last month, right?
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're all making beer. We're all brewers, whether you want to call us craft or not craft or whatever. I'm pretty sure Pernicious was a craft IPA like 2 months ago, and I'm pretty sure it's still a craft IPA now, right? So we're all doing the same thing, and we're beer, and we're fighting this bigger battle, which is wine and spirits, and we're losing margin every year to them. So they've got to be looking at this and just laughing, thinking this is just, why are you throwing us a bone right now? You guys are literally infighting. This is a civil war. Meanwhile, this armada of boats is coming across the Atlantic to crush us, and we're shooting each other with you know, muskets and slingshots. So what's the point, right? We need to band together and grow this market as a whole. And if we do that, everybody's got a great space in the market, right? Because small independents like us innovate, they get a platform from a strategic or something to take those great ideas and take it to a bigger market and create new consumers and grow the space as a whole. What does that do? Opens up more spaces for innovation, and good product wins. So that's the point of this whole thing. And you know, I was hoping that we could just get back to talking about beer, but you know, I guess we're not there yet, but hopefully soon.
A little bit of bitterness there. Is wine and spirits this big Spanish armada that's coming to conquer beer?
I feel like he's not exactly, for both of them, they're not exactly answering the question or the issue. It's just sort of their spin on it.
Yeah, I agree. Here's Garrett Wales of 10 Barrel.
At the end of the day, the beer does the talking, not the label on the package. And the consumer makes up their own mind. The problem is that the BA continues to refuse to let the consumer make up their own mind and trying to make it up for them. A little bottle that someone told me that that's what I have to buy because there's a little bottle on the six pack, that doesn't mean shit to me.
More bitterness. And now these guys, they've all been flown to the same location. The background on all these videos is the same. So it's like these are all like the former owners of these breweries and now the operator of the brewery or the head brewer or whatever, they've been flown to some location by the corporate overlords and told, requested them to make this spin of a video. But for them to go take these steps to do this, it must have rattled their cage a little bit, I would imagine. Here's Andy Ingram from Four Peaks.
There are clear threats from wine and spirits out there that whether we're being willful and not noticing that, or we're just too busy about fighting amongst ourselves, but there it's a clear present danger. There are storm clouds on the horizon for the beer industry. Some people think it's top heavy. I don't. I think we can sustain a lot more, but we're not going to be able to do that if we are divided. So that's a key role going forward, I think, that the BA needs to focus on, as well as getting back to quality. When the major trade organization says that it doesn't matter what's in your glass as long as it's independent, and they're telling consumers that, that's a big issue. You're saying, go ahead and drink crap, just as long as you don't support the big guys. That's not healthy. It's not a good way to go forward.
Now that's just patently ridiculous. Just because it has a logo on it doesn't mean you're going to drink that beer. You're also going to have the decision like you do now, whether it has the logo or not, you're still going to buy the beer that's good. You might buy a beer and try it, and if it's not good, you'll never buy that one again. Same as it is now, where nobody has a label.
Yeah, the label doesn't say this is great beer. There's plenty of small independent breweries that make bad beer. It's interesting that two of them are so focused on wine and spirits when everywhere I look around, there's so much growth in the beer world. And it's mostly in craft beer, of course, but we just see phenomenal growth. And they're talking about losing market share to wine and spirits. That's not what I expected to hear. I mean, my biggest issue with big beer is not flavor, quality, or anything like that. It's more like the shelf space. And I believe in having choices, and people are going to have different beers that they like, and everybody has a different palate. And I think the real issue is that these huge conglomerates, the more they buy up, the more difficult it is for other breweries to compete because they just don't get the opportunity. And so, you know, am I going to buy every single beer that says independent craft beer on it? Probably not. But I think it is a good way to just educate people and give them some choices.
Here's Steve Crandall from The Devil's Backbone.
We're going to continue being the same guys we've always been. We're going to continue offering the best possible beers and occasions to our consumers that we've always done. And we're always going to support the craft beer industry.
And then David Bueller of Elysian finished it off.
Well, to be independent would mean you don't put the logo on because you're indie. So to be truly punk, you don't use the logo. You do your own thing and you follow your own rules.
So I don't think these small independent breweries consider themselves punk. You know, maybe some of them do. I know some of them do. But in general, they're just trying to get a foothold in the local market and grow and expand and make good beer. And they're all trying to do that. So I don't know. Like, and having the camaraderie of other breweries and standing together against the big conglomerate beer. I mean, what's wrong with that? I know InBev's perspective is they don't want that. They don't want them banding together and teaming up and using albeit small little marketing ploys against them. So anyway, pretty interesting comments. Just one example of some of the methods that AB InBev uses. And this came out a couple months ago, I think in May. But basically, InBev has bought out the entire African hop market so that the hops that are produced in South Africa, albeit not a lot, but they do have some of the more cutting edge and experimental hops that are out there. And those hops are no longer available to any American craft brewers. Those hops are reserved entirely for the high end breweries in AB InBev's catalog. So that includes Wicked Weed, Elysian, 10 Barrel, all those ones we talked about. And this created quite an uproar on Twitter. Modern Times Brewery, which we like in San Diego, said, "Next time you consider buying beer from AB InBev and their zombie breweries, we hope you'll take this extreme dickishness into consideration." Cellar Maker, "Think AB InBev purchases don't matter for the craft beer industry. All South African hops have been allocated to AB InBev high-end brands." Now, AB InBev released a response to this. They seem to be on the defensive, you know, more and more lately, where the independent breweries come out with something in reaction to what they've done and then their response. "South Africa is not a traditional hop growing region. Our efforts have made it possible to grow hops in South Africa, but it's still less than 1% of the world's hop acreage and production. This year they suffered low yields. 90% of the South African grown hops will be used in local brands like Castle Lager and Castle Light." I guess those are South African beers. "That means less than 5% can be allocated to other Anheuser-Busch InBev breweries outside South Africa. Knowing the high demand for South African hops and locally and abroad, we are working to expand local hop acreage. Depending on the 2018 crop outcome, we may once again be able to sell more hops to breweries outside of South Africa." So that's the response. They're saying, well, there's not that many hops here, and we're selling it mostly to our local South African brands. But still, I mean, why should they go to just their high-end breweries? And how, isn't it a little bit conceited to call themselves high-end?
I was going to ask, is that their name? I mean, it must be their name that they've developed, right?
Yeah, that's their name. That's the name of their suite of breweries.
But that's weird to me, because then they're basically acknowledging that the rest of their beer is not very good.
Low end?
I don't know.
That's pretty funny. And then there's this other article that you sent me, Jeff. Do you want to take us through that?
Yeah, I found an interesting article that sort of fits in with this whole theme. And it's something I didn't really think too much about before, but it got me thinking. So basically, you know, when a large, you know, company like InBev acquires a small brewery, the issue comes up with the water quality, because basically a lot of breweries say that their beer is better because of the local water that they use. I mean, everywhere we go, they talk about how great the water is. Breweries of all sizes say this, that it's the local water that makes the difference. And so, you know, it kind of brings to light the question of when you start getting bigger and growing, and if you, even if it's through acquisition, how do you keep that same quality when you are making beer in different locations? And the example from this article was, you know, many years ago, Anheuser-Busch bought Goose Island in Chicago. And at the time it was, you know, Chicago water used to make their beer. But now they make Goose Island in other places outside of Chicago, other parts of the U.S. They're also planning to make it soon in Europe. And so the question comes up of how do they maintain that same quality, or at least the image, if they're saying it's better because of the local water that's used. And so it's just kind of an interesting article when you see this growth and you see, you know, take a beer like Miller Lite that's made at, you know, places all around the country, and they find a way to make it taste exactly the same. I think that's harder to do with craft beer. But this, you know, this article is just kind of interesting to talk about how do you maintain that quality, especially in a world where you have mergers happening and buying out smaller craft breweries and making the same beer using the same recipe in a different location.
Yeah. And a lot of breweries that have, the ones that have gotten big enough to branch out, like Sierra Nevada moving to Mills River, North Carolina, and they had to get the water, the pH and the different, what do you call it? The
alkalinity.
Yeah. Minerals, all the things that are in the water in Chico, you know, they had to come up with a way to simulate the water over there and use the filtration and different means to get a similar taste when they brew the beer with the same recipe. And it took them a couple of years, I think, to get that right. But then once they did, they were able to brew pale ale there and in Chico, and they've had the expert taste testers in the world taste the beer and not be able to tell the difference reliably.
Yeah, it's just interesting because, you know, beer, the number one ingredient in beer is water. And if all of these breweries are going to claim that the water is so key, it almost doesn't quite make sense when you can use all these advanced filtration methods to make the same beer using the same recipe in different areas and get it to taste exactly the same. Something sort of amiss there.
Yeah, I think it can be solved through science and through money. I think AB InBev has plenty of money that they can invest in getting the chemistry right. And Sierra Nevada is nearly a $1 billion operation. They can spend the money to get that figured out as well. But I think, you know, a smaller operation might have a tough time brewing an exact tasting beer in two different sides of the country. All right. Well, that was a lot of talking with the news. I think it's time for the next beer.
I agree.
Okay. Up next, we have Bent Hop Golden IPA. Sticking with the golden theme, this is from Bent Paddle Brewing Company in Duluth, Minnesota.
One of those beers that smells good right as you open the can.
Yeah. As soon as you open it, the room is filled with this hop goodness.
But I'm smelling it more, and there's plenty of malt in this too. I mean, it's pretty well balanced on the aroma.
So I'm looking at a slightly hazy, slightly cloudy, light copper color.
Pretty clear though.
Yours might be clearer than mine. Mine has a little bit of a cloud to it. Not hazy though, cloudy.
The head is kind of a off-white, foamy. Looks like it's going to have pretty good retention and some... Even as I swirl it, some nice lacing on the glass.
Yeah, very good lacing. Very even. Smelling it in the glass, I get kind of a light citrus hop.
Yeah, I get citrus. It smells a little earthy also.
Yeah, I get that too. And then you get kind of a sweet maltiness as well. But when I opened the can, the aroma was very much prevalent. And smelling it in the glass, I don't get it as much.
Taste is good. This is... what I would call a well-balanced IPA. It has some sweet malt, like you mentioned, from the aroma. That definitely shows up in the taste. I think a really nice amount of hops. The hops, to me, are a little earthy and piney, but also a little citrusy. It's just really smooth flavor.
It is. It has a very interesting malt flavor to this. Very powerful. It's like sweet bread. Even like a pastry, kind of. Like I get a lot of sweetness in the malt, like a sugar donut or something. And then the hops come through after that, kind of in the aftertaste, with just a very slight bitterness, a hop bitterness in the aftertaste.
Yeah, I really like this beer. I'm having a hard time describing it. The malts are different. I think you're right. They are sweet. They're a little bready, but it's like a pan dulce, like a Mexican... bread, like a sweet bread, mm-hmm. kind of flavoring.
Very unique.
A little bit like cinnamon roll too. Like if I took cinnamon roll as an ingredient in beer, I think it would maybe show up a little bit like this. It's not really bitter at all. This is 6.2%. It's a golden IPA. I don't really know what a golden IPA means. If that's referring to the color, I assume. It's not really a style of IPA. What do you think about that, Dallas?
Yeah, I'm thinking of ones I've had recently. Sierra Nevada had their golden IPA, and it's kind of a lighter, less hoppy version of, say, their Torpedo, or it's like a sweeter, a little bit more accessible IPA. I wouldn't call it wheat, though. It never ventures into the wheat range. It's more of a lighter colored, more drinkable, less pronounced hops would be my definition of the golden IPA.
Yeah, I think it's super drinkable, smooth, like medium carbonation. I like the mouthfeel on this a lot. It's not bitter at all, like I mentioned earlier. I think it's just nothing overpowers flavors. I think it's the unique malt flavor, like we said, a good amount of hops, but there's no sort of flavors that completely dominate this beer.
No, very drinkable. I think you're not going to find a golden IPA that's more than 7%, although we might have one on the show later.
But yeah, this is a beer from Duluth, Minnesota. You know, we were just talking about water quality. I got to imagine the water quality in Minnesota is pretty good. Some, you know, from the Great Lakes area.
Oh, yeah. Don't you know?
I like this a lot. This is probably my first beer from Duluth, and it's tasty. I'm very impressed.
Quite good. Bent Hop from Bent Paddle. All right, we're halfway done with the show. When we come back, we have the Shower Beer from Champion Brewing in Charlottesville, Virginia. And then I'm going to try the top four beers in this country and compare them against each other. That and more when we come back. This is the Beer of the Day podcast. So we're 75 episodes into this podcast. And if you've not been shopping on Amazon through the Beer of the Day website, what the hell have you been doing? I mean, it's been 2 years now. You could have been shopping on Amazon this whole time and we could have made tens of dollars off of your shopping habits. And I'll tell you how it works. Just this week, somebody went to the Beer of the Day website. They clicked on the Amazon banner. They went to Amazon and they purchased Jelly Belly Jelly Beans draft beer flavor. Now, I can't vouch for the taste of these jelly beans. I don't know if they taste like draft beer. Somehow, I doubt they're even that good. But as a novelty, I could see it being a pretty good purchase. It cost them $3.95 for how big of a bag is it? 3.5 ounces. That's $1.13 an ounce. Pretty pricey. We got 20 cents off of that purchase. So that's a small purchase. Somebody else purchased the Mastering the Art of French Cooking 2-volume set. Now that is a tough task. Mastering the Art of French Cooking. For $53.77, they purchased that book and we made $2.42. All these purchases, I'm looking at a list here of 12 different purchases that people have made. It all adds up. So we'll be able to use that money to buy beer on a future show here. And we appreciate you supporting us by shopping through the Beer of the Day website on Amazon. You can also help us by telling your friends about it. Obviously, as a craft beer drinker, you probably associate with other craft beer drinkers that might like a beer podcast to listen to. Just say, hey, you know what? You should check out Beer of the Day, beerofthedaypodcast.com. They go there, they click play, or tell them to go to iTunes, and they can subscribe right in the podcast app on their iPhone or Android phone. So a lot of different ways to get the podcast, and we appreciate you spreading the word about it. Let's get back to the show. Welcome back to the Beer of the Day podcast. The next beer we have to try is one that was a style that was very popular, and I think a lot of different breweries came up with the same idea at the same time. And they all release the same kind of idea for a beer. And this is the Shower Beer. Continuing with the golden theme. Shower Beer is a Czech-style pils from Champion Brewing Company, Charlottesville, Virginia, home of Thomas Jefferson.
We're going to have to add in some applause at that joke back there.
The golden shower joke?
Mm-hmm.
So, 4.5%, 35 IBU, good-looking golden color can.
The beer, too, is it's a light color, light yellow. I'd call it pure yellow, golden yellow.
How clear is this beer?
Mine is so cold that it's like, you know, making the glass
fog sort up.
Of fog up a little bit.
Mine is not that cold, and it is very clear. I see maybe 20 little tiny bubbles at one time floating upward. And then there's a lot of soapy bath bubble head on here.
Yeah, mine's not quite as clear as like the Beechwood Melrose that we were talking about at the beginning. But it's pretty clear. So there's a slight haze to it, though, at least in my glass.
Yeah, not in mine. The head, though, it's like bubble bath bubbles.
It is. It's very foamy, very frothy, really like pure white color, pretty thick.
The aroma is kind of your standard Czech Pilsner, slightly European smell. Just that two-row malt aroma, not very complex, maybe a slight corn, slight barley, a very just classic Pilsner aroma.
Yeah, this is a beer that is not going to be super hoppy. It's going to have some Czech hops in it, but it's all malt in the aroma, and that grainy corn and wheat, you know, all that is what you're going to get in most beers of this style.
The flavor is traditional Czech style Pilsner. It gives you that nice, very light, crisp flavor, slight malt, and then you get those kind of Bavarian hops in the aftertaste. A fair amount for the style of hops, I'd say.
Yeah, and they have a bit of a earthy, there's a little bite to it, like a peppery bite that I think must be from the hops. I doubt there's any rye in this, but it has almost that like bite that you get from a rye beer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tasty beer, but it's light. It's a specific style for this reason. It's what you drink. I mean, it's called a shower beer, but this is something I associate with drinking on a hot summer day, sitting outside by the pool. But yes, you could drink it in the shower.
Right.
Absolutely. It's the same sort of concept.
When I hear shower beer, when all these breweries came out with shower beers, beers that you drink in the shower in the morning as you're getting ready to go out or whatever, a football Sunday or something like that, I always think it might be like sweeter, like more mimosa-y. And I'm surprised and glad that this beer is more dry and more traditional lager. It's not trying to be orange juice, mimosa, you know, type of morning drink. You know, like, you know, morning drink is orange juice or maybe it's Bloody Mary, but those are kind of the two options for morning. And this is not. This is saying, nope, we're sticking with beer, classic beer. Classic Czech Pilsner, and that's what they're going with. And they even maybe popped a little more hops in there than you'd normally expect, which was refreshing.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think of a shower beer as something that you drink in the morning when you take a shower. I mean, you could, but I think it's like any time of day. Like you said, you're out, you know, you're going out for the night, you're taking a shower before you go out or something like that. It's what you drink to sort of get yourself warmed up. This is a good warm-up beer. This is something I would drink before I get into beers that are the pale ales or the IPAs that I traditionally go for. You know, it's a Pilsner. It's a lager. Pilsners are probably my favorite type of lagers, and it's good for the style. It's not something I'm going to drink a ton of, but this is a good warm-up beer, and I think that's really what a shower beer is.
Good point. You know, we do this podcast, and before the beer, nine times out of 10, I'd say 74 out of 75 times, we have a warm-up beer before we start recording. Sometimes we have five or six warm-up beers. This would be a really good warm-up beer because it's nice, light, crisp. The taste doesn't linger. It kind of has a finish to the flavor, and so it's not going to wreck your palate for all the other beers you're going to try on the podcast. So you could drink this before the show and not have the beers that you have before the show influencing your opinions and flavors of beers you're going to have subsequently.
Yeah, it warms up your palate. Perfect.
We'll wait for that motorcycle to drive by. Jeff lives next door to the Sons of Anarchy. Not many of you knew that they had a Pasadena chapter, but sure enough. All right, so this is a new segment here. A couple of weeks ago on this show, I read a list of the top 50 craft brewing companies. And those top five were number five, Gambrinus, which is Shiner Bock and Texas Beer, which we've not had much of on this show. Number four was New Belgium in Fort Collins, Colorado. Our opinions of that are well documented. Number three, Sierra Nevada from Chico, California, one of our favorite breweries of all time. Number two, Boston Beer Company. They are the creators of Sam Adams. Perhaps you've heard of it. And the number one craft brewery in the country is D.G. Yuengling & Sons. D.G. Yuengling & Sons is the oldest operating brewery in the United States, established in 1829. Based on volume sold in 2016, Yuengling was a top craft beer company in the U.S. Now, this is a little bit of a surprise to me because they don't serve it anywhere. It's not shipped anywhere on the West Coast or west of the Mississippi. So it's not a beer we can get in California. And I've traveled enough and been in locations where they've had it before, but I've had this beer less than five times in my life. So I'm going to try this beer now. And so I haven't had it many times before. So it's a little bit of a mystery to me.
I've had this a few times. I mean, I'm not participating in this little test, but maybe I can add some comments. But I've had this a few times during travels to the East Coast. So I'm looking forward to what you find out here.
Well, the thing that's weird to me is that they only distribute east of the Mississippi, yet somehow they sell the highest volume of beer in the country besides big beer. Anheuser-Busch, Miller Coors, Pabst Brewing Company sell more than Yuengling, but those three distribute everywhere in the country. You know, they're in every liquor store in the country. And the next biggest, Boston Beer Company, Sam Adams, and Sierra Nevada also distribute throughout the whole country, and they sell less beer than Yuengling. So it's pretty crazy to think how much beer they are selling. And I'm sure a lot of it has to do with the fact that they've been around for so long.
I think it's cheap too. Like it's craft beer, if we want to call it craft beer, that is priced way cheaper than a lot of craft beer these days. I don't know what it goes for these days, but I just remember going to the East Coast and a six pack of Yuengling was about the same price as like a six pack of Budweiser.
Right.
And so from a price point, it's very economical for beer that in my mind has more flavor.
Yeah. So the thing is that in the back of my mind, I start to have that sense of doubt. Is it really craft? Is it big beer in disguise? And as far as I can tell, it's as much craft as the Boston Beer Company or Sierra Nevada. They've gotten huge over time, but they still, are considered craft beer. So it's Yuengling is family owned and operated for five generations. It has two breweries in Pottsville, Pennsylvania, and it opened a new one in Tampa, Florida. And it's owned by Dick Yuengling Jr. And when he's ready, he's going to turn at least 51% of the company over to one of his daughters. And he has four daughters, but I guess two of them are in contention for it. And he's already chosen his successor. So it's going to stay in the family. It's a pretty interesting story. During Prohibition, they were around. They switched over to making near beer, you know, beer that was 0.5% alcohol. They also opened up a dairy and made milk and ice cream and that type of thing, which actually reopened recently. So my buddy Jorge brought me a Yuengling lager. He had a buddy ship it back from the East Coast, and I have it here. And I also have the flagship beers from the non-craft beers that are ahead of Yuengling on the list. AB InBev, I have their number one selling beer, Bud Light. From Miller Coors, I have their number one selling beer, Coors Light, which is the number three selling beer in this country. Number two, I mean. And I have the number three brewery in the country, Pabst. And I have Pabst Blue Ribbon, their flagship. So my goal here is to compare Yuengling the number one craft brewery to the three big beers that are produce more than it on the list. Does that make sense? Yingling's number four, and these three are ahead of it.
Makes sense to me.
And I want to just kind of get a sense. I'm not doing blind taste tests or anything like that. I'm just going to assess the flavors here and determine if Yingling comes off as more craft than these non-craft beers. So I'm going to start with, I'll start with Bud Light and work my way down. Bud Light is a, man, it has that sweetness in the aftertaste. It initially you get that cold rice malt is what it is, really. I'd call it barley, but it's really rice. And then it has that sweet, sugary finish, which I think allows it to sell so much beer. Coors Light. Ugh. Sometimes it's hard to, you've had these beers so many times and you just become numb to it because you've drank so many of them over the years. Coors Light is just so watery. There's nothing distinct about it. And now Pabst. Pabst has a little more flavor than Coors Light. Still very light. The aftertaste gives you more of an alcoholic kick, even though I think these are all 4.5%. All right, I'm going to try Yingling now. This is also 4.5%. It comes in a gold-topped can. It fits the theme. And it's called an amber beer on the can. Yingling is, without a doubt, has more body to it. It's more of a substantial beer, and it is smoother. So each one of these other beers, Bud Light has this sugar sweetness in the aftertaste. Coors Light has kind of a metallic emptiness to it. And Pabst, I think, is the best of the first three. It has more flavor, but it's a little, it's also metallic and has kind of, the flavors aren't as balanced and the alcohol is a little more pronounced. It kicks a little bit more. Yingling is definitely smoother, less kick, and more body. There's like more of a caramel malt. I'm not saying it's a caramel malty beer, but I'm saying on the spectrum, it's leaning a little bit that way. And that must be why it's called amber. I bet if I poured it into a glass, we'd see a little more color definition to this beer.
Yeah, I was just going to say, from what I remember about Yingling, it's a pretty significantly different color from the rest of those. It's much more of like an amber ale. Drinks like a lager, but I think it has a lot more similarities to an amber ale than any of the other beers you're drinking.
It is smooth. It's not even in the same boat. It's not even the same league. It's far superior to these other three. So if you ask me, I mean, it's not the style that all the other craft breweries come out with. Craft breweries are pale ales, summer lagers, not a whole lot of the popular ones are. But Yingling has been making beer for so long, they're making styles that they've made for a long time. I think it was in the 87 or something when the lager became their number one seller. And it's continued to be since then. So they did come out with a IPL, Yingling IPL. So they are making hoppier beers, and I've not tried that. I have no idea what it tastes like, but you can taste the quality with this one for sure. And I can see why people build loyalty to this brand and buy it. They buy more of it than Sierra Nevada, and they buy more of it than Sam Adams. So they got to be doing something right. I'm surprised they haven't come to California.
Eventually. I mean, it's only, I don't know their exact distribution, but it's basically east of the Mississippi, right?
Yeah, basically. They keep adding more states, so maybe they will make it out here eventually. All right, well, that's a little bit about Yingling. I was impressed by it, I have to say. I always kind of consider it another macro beer, big beer that we just can't get here. But there is a considerable advantage in quality it has over the big three that it trails in sales volume. So I'm a fan.
I'm going to mention the beer that I was drinking while Dallas was doing his little tasting there. Is that okay?
Go for it.
So I don't want to be left out. So I opened a bottle of a beer. It's called Valles Aurea. It's from Ladyface Ale Company, which is in Agoura Hills, California. Pretty close to where I live. It's just a little north of LA.
How do they spell company?
C-O-M-P-A-N-I-E.
That's cute.
Yes. It's a really cool brewery if you are in the LA area. I used to live very close to Ladyface. It's sort of in the Malibu direction, right along the hills. And it's a beautiful area. I picked up this bottle at the brewery. It is a Belgian style golden ale with Brettanomyces. And so I just opened it. I was sort of sipping it while Dallas was drinking his Coors Light and Pabst and Bud Light. Puts all those to shame, I'll tell you that. It's a really interesting beer. So again, it's a Belgian style golden ale. I wanted to stick with the golden theme. Color wise, it is pretty clear, you know, much more clear than I thought. Sort of a light copper, really an amber color. And the head on it is pretty thin. It's white, but it's so thin it's even hard to tell how white the head is. What is there is very fizzy. But the aroma on this beer, I've been aging this for a little while. It was bottled in 2015. The aroma is so strong. Like just right when I open this, it fills the room with the aroma. A little bit of like a burning sensation in the aroma, which makes for an interesting beer. It's a strong beer. I mean, it's
only 6.89.
I think it's so. What's cool? It's handwritten on there. It's 6.8%. It is. You definitely taste the Brett, the Brettanomyces. It's not. It's probably barrel aged too. I'm guessing because I taste a little bit of barrel in here. It may not be, but this is like a sort of kick you in the face beer. It's strong. You know, I like the style, the Belgian style golden ale. It's got a little bit of honey sweetness to it. There's very little hops. I mean, it's not a style that you're going for the hops. Tastes a lot like some of the high quality beers that we had in Belgium when we were there. Reminds me a little bit of the first beer that we had on the show, the Glitter and Gold, but just a much stronger version. This is one that you got to sip. And, you know, if I was by myself, I could not probably drink this whole bottle just real easily. It's one you got to share with your friends. But I like this. This is a high quality beer. Ladyface makes some good beer. So this is the first that I've actually opened their bottle and not had on tap at the brewery. Pretty good.
Sounds good.
Incoming transmission.
You've got mail.
It's been a while since our last show, so the comments have piled up just a little bit. On our last podcast, episode 74, What's My Name Again? Alan Follett said, around 10% Imperial Lager, eh? Do you suppose Old English 800 could move upscale by relabeling itself as one? Hey, I think they should give it a try. What do you think, Jeff?
Sure. I mean, it's all a marketing game. They could do it.
Alan Follett, he's in Hercules, California, East Bay. And he said, encountered June 14th, 17 at Albany Tap Room. Albany's just north of Berkeley, south of El Cerrito. He says, opaque, dark brown, long-lasting head, nose and taste have elements of black coffee and caramel with a touch of spiciness. Smooth mouthfeel, alcohol is not as apparent on the tongue as would be expected from the ABV figure. He's talking about Mike Hess, the San Diego brewery there, Umbrix Imperial Stout. Sounds like a good one. I'd like to try that. So thanks for posting the description, Alan. From our trip to Chicago recently, we had the Daisy Cutter on the site. as the beer of the day. Kent in Minneapolis, Minnesota said, this is a great beer. Had a few on a layover in O'Hare Airport. If you have a layover at O'Hare Airport and you're drinking Daisy Cutter, that's not a bad layover.
Seriously.
In my opinion.
That's the first thing I thought of when I saw that comment.
He also,
that's a great airport beer.
It is. Perfect. He also commented on Steel Toe Size 7 IPA, which was the first beer I had in Minneapolis, where Kent is from. This is a great Twin Cities IPA. It was one of the top rated in a blind taste test of local IPAs a while back. I can see why. It was one of the best IPAs I had while I was in Minneapolis. And one of the best on that whole trip, Midwest trip. Also from our Midwest trip, from New Glarus Brewing Company in New Glarus, Wisconsin, we had the Spotted Cow as the beer of the day. Go Pound Sand commented on Spotted Cow. Craft beer for people who don't like craft beer. That shots fired.
Interesting, because we sort of thought the same thing when we were there, because they didn't, when we were there, they didn't have an IPA. It was sort of like craft in a way. And they sell so much beer. They only distribute in Wisconsin, and they're one of the biggest breweries in the U.S. But they didn't have an IPA. So it's sort of like the people that are so used to drinking, you know, big beer. They like that. And, you know, New Glarus was fine. We had some good beers. Tasty, interesting place.
I don't know how they sell so much beer. I mean, they only sell it in Wisconsin. They got to be selling a ton of it. But then this Pabst Blue Ribbon I'm drinking is a Wisconsin beer, and it's the number three brewery in the country. So they got to be selling a lot as well.
I've just concluded that people who live in Wisconsin drink a ton of beer. Yeah. That's got to be what it is.
So Go Pound Sand is from Decorah, Iowa. I don't know if he works for Toppling Goliath, or he is just a fan of Toppling Goliath, or just lives in the same town as Toppling Goliath. But he signed up on the site shortly after our trip there. So he might be. I don't know who he is. He also commented on Hop Gun, Funky Buddha Brewery in Oakland Park, Florida. One of my favorites when I'm in South Florida. Now, Toppling Goliath brews their canned beers in Tampa, Florida, not South Florida. So, but maybe he travels to Florida on business if he's a Toppling Goliath guy. No idea. Hey, Go Pound Sand, let us know who you are. Maybe we met you when we were there. We don't know. Gray Bar, he's in Anchorage, Alaska, and he commented on Fallen Angel, a Belgian strong from Midnight Sun Brewing Company in Anchorage. And Gray Bar said, this great tasting IPS beer, maybe IPA beer, has truly significant color and flavor appealing to the palate. It has a different taste that's hard to describe, but definitely impeccable. I've had a lot of good beers from Midnight Sun, and we have a few in the Beer of the Day vault that we're going to have on a future program. This show is called The Gold Standard, and someone commented on Golden Boy Blonde Ale from Triple C Brewing Company in Charlotte, North Carolina. SM Ham said, usually drink Miller Lite. Apparently he's upgrading. The taste of this beer was very delightful. Unique taste. Asked the server who sold it, went there and purchased it, and Golden Girl. So he got Golden Boy and Golden Girl. He's a big fan of it. SM Ham is from Cornelius, North Carolina, home to the radio god and podcasting legend Mark Thompson and his wife Linda. Few people know that. Southside Irish Red from Hailstorm Brewing Company, B. Mucklin. Perfect. Next best to Yingling that I have tasted. Well, now that I've had Yingling on this show, I can kind of compare it to what you're talking about. He's from New Lenox, Illinois. And CJ Sports Beer Pod. Great offering by an outstanding brewery in San Diego. Nice, crisp summer beer. He's talking about Modern Times, Accumulated Knowledge IPA, CJ Sports Beer Pod is from Portland. I don't know if that means he has a podcast. It kind of sounds like it. CJ, if you want to plug your pod, you know, hit us up and let us know who you are and what you're doing, and we can cross promote, you know. You scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. So we thank everybody for all the comments this week. If you have any comments, go to beeroftheday.com and leave the comments anywhere on the site. You can also email us at feedback@beeroftheday.com. Okay, it's time to get into the last beer of the night. We mentioned Toppling Goliath, and this is a beer that we brought back from that brewery. This is the Golden Nugget IPA.
Geez, also aromatic. Every beer tonight, as I open it, and you are forced to open beers on your own, just fills the room with that hop aroma.
My fingernails are peeling off.
Lots of comments lately. I like to see that.
Yeah, definitely a lot of comments. We love seeing comments. Leave those comments because it's fun to get them. And, you know, we don't like to be putting these beers of the day out into a vacuum. You know, we want feedback.
That Accumulated Knowledge beer that received a comment, really interesting for Modern Times because it's only available at Trader Joe's, which I don't know how widespread Trader Joe's is. It's for sure in California and some other states. But that's a tasty IPA. I had that recently. So that is one that I would say is one that you should pick up if you see it. All right, let's talk about this beer, Golden Nugget.
So it's golden color. I'm looking at the beer and I see no carbonation floating up. It's completely still.
No carbonation, but a lot of head.
A lot of head. I got three fingers of head. It doesn't appear to be dissipating. It's big bubbles. It's like stickier bubbles, though, than that bath bubbles that we had with the shower beer. But I'm surprised at the lack of carbonation. We've got just a ever so slightly cloudy yellow color.
Well, we should say, like, just because we can't see bubbles doesn't mean there's lack of carbonation. What we're referring to is like visible carbonation, like a stream of bubbles coming up.
Stream of bubbles floating up, correct.
Right. Yeah, the beer could still have a lot of carbonation that just isn't visible in the glass.
Correct. Like with the shower beer, the bubbles were visible. I could see a stream of about 25 bubbles at a time floating up. Aroma, it's very tame. I just get a very slight sweetness, maybe a slight tropical hop aroma, but not a ton of smells here.
I get a fair amount. I get some citrus and tropical fruit. I mean, it's hoppy in the aroma. Maybe it seems a little floral also in the aroma. I mean, I get a lot of hops in the aroma. Mm. When you opened that can, did it like fill the room, or was it just here, my can?
I think the aroma of the Pabst and the Coors Light are counteracting it.
Taste is pretty good. I mean, Toppling Goliath is high quality. We have high expectations for a beer like this. I like the taste.
It has a kind of a citrus hop quality, like a little bit soapy, like Dawn dish soap. And I don't want that to be a bad thing. It's just that's how poignant the citrus flavors are.
Yeah, I mean, Toppling Goliath, we were there. We met the owner. He said, like, the number one most important thing they care about is mouthfeel in beer. And I think this has the soapy mouthfeel, which, again, not a bad thing. It's just like the texture of how it coats. It's the mouth coating. It's how it tastes. And every beer they make has excellent mouthfeel from my experience.
You know, you compare this to Pseudo Sue, which I happen to have in this other glass over here. I was drinking this earlier as my warm-up beer. Pseudo Sue is a little more malty. It's a pale ale. It's It has a little bit more of a caramel malt backbone. This golden nugget concentrates on the hops flavors almost exclusively. It's very hop forward and the upper register of hops. You know, you have like earthy hops and you have floral hops, and then above that you have citrus hops and tropical hops, and you get to those higher end spectrums. And I think maybe citrus is the top of that list, where you get the very lemon centric flavors and grapefruit pith. And this has a lot of those types of flavors.
Yeah. This is a beer that it's made with nugget hops, which I feel like we don't see that much of these days. I drink a lot of IPAs and I don't see a lot of nugget hops, but I think there's two hop flavors that really stand out for me. I think this is a very citrusy beer, and I think it's also very piney. And it's the combination of the citrus and the pine. And, you know, there's some malts there, but the malts are really there just to provide like a supporting role. But it's the citrus and the pine that really lend the flavor to this beer.
Yeah, this beer also remains very drinkable. There's not a prolonged aftertaste. It's not overly alcoholic. It's lighter mouthfeel, lighter body. And so this is for sure a summer day beer.
We don't know the alcohol percentage because I don't think they put the ABV on any of their beers. I don't think we've ever seen that. I'd guess it's in the 6 to 7% range. IBU is probably 60, 70, somewhere around there. It's not bitter. I take that back. There's a slight bitterness in the finish, like a little bit of grapefruit. Maybe that's the citrus that we picked up early on, but there's just a very light bitterness, but not a bitter IPA. This is tasty. I'm impressed with this. When we were at Toppling Goliath, this is not a beer that we paid a lot of attention to. We were very focused on the King Sue and Sosus and Pseudo Sue. And this is one that we I don't want to say we overlooked it, but we sort of had it on the back burner when it came to priority. And I'm glad we're drinking this now because it's better than I expected.
Yeah, definitely. So we'll look at the competition online. Beer Advocate has the alcohol listed at 6% with 56 IBU. Rate Beer has it listed at 7.2% ABV.
That's a bit of a range.
Yeah, 1.2% higher. Also 56% IBU, so we can kind of go along with that. And Untappd has it at 6.3%, somewhere in the middle, 56 IBU. So they all agree on the IBU, and they differ on the alcohol. Each one differs on the alcohol percentage. So we'll say
it doesn't matter. It's not a boozy beer. Whether it's 6%, 7%, doesn't really matter, right?
Does not. I don't care. Definitely a light hop forward. Hop forward IPA, but in the upper spectrum, like the, you know, in the music scale, it's going to be like, it's the soprano of hops.
It's just like meaty, like it's not light bodied. It's not heavy. It's just pretty easy drinking, medium body IPA. It's not a beginner's IPA. And it's not for the super hoppy fan. It's just somewhere in the middle. I like that.
All right. Well, I think that concludes the beers for the night. Jeff, you want to take us through what we had?
I will do my best here. I'll try to remember the ones that you had. So we started out the night with the Glitter and Gold from Perennial Artisan. I'm going to say Artisan Ales. In St. Louis, Missouri. Then we had the Bent Hop Golden IPA from Bent Paddle. After the break, we had the Shower Beer, the Czech Style Pils from Champion Brewing Company. Dallas did a little tasting where he had Bud Light, Coors Light, and Pabst. All three compared against Yingling Lager. Simultaneously, I drank the Valis Aurea from Ladyface Ale Company. And then we both wrapped up with the Golden Nugget IPA from Toppling Goliath in Decorah, Iowa.
All right. So I don't have anyone to spin the wheel tonight, and it's only two of us. So we only had one bottle beer tonight, and that was Glitter and Gold. And I have a bottle cap from that. So I'm going to flip the bottle cap on the table. If the bottle cap lands with the flat on the table straight down, Jeff will go first. If it lands upside down with the bottle cap, the inside of the bottle cap facing upward, then I will go first. How's that?
Works for me.
The bottle cap is facing downward with the inside facing upward, which means I go first. I wasn't expecting that. I assumed the bottle cap would land, you know, the conventional way. All right. My beer of the day is Glitter and Gold. Birra de Miel is the style. It's a honey beer. Perennial artesian ale, St. Louis, Missouri. This beer just screamed quality to me. It was so balanced. It had a malt flavor that was unique and unlike anything I'd really had before. There were some fruit flavors to it that complemented everything well. And it reminded me of some of the best beers I had in the world when I was in Belgium. I was very disappointed that there weren't more people here for this podcast because I want them to be able to try this beer. They're not going to be able to. And luckily, Jeff goes to St. Louis once a year for work, business, so he'll be able to bring back some more of this at some point. So my beer of the day, Glitter and Gold.
I have to concur. My pick's going to be Glitter and Gold as well. I like the show. Every beer was good. I especially like the Bent Hop Golden IPA from Duluth. Perhaps the best IPA I've had from that region. So that was very tasty. But it's hard to compete with the Glitter and Gold for the style. You know, like Dallas said, the high quality. Everything about that beer was perfect. I brought back two bottles. Part of me regrets sending one up to Dallas. I kind of wanted to keep two here, but we're all about sharing good beer. And so I'm happy we were able to have that. It's a phenomenal beer. Next time I go to St. Louis, I'm for sure going back there because that was an excellent beer. So I'd like to be different, but I got to go with the same beer, the Glitter and Gold from Perennial in St. Louis.
Good choice. I like that. All right. Well, because my dad is good friends with Paul McCartney, I got permission to use this golden song on the show tonight.
Once there was a way to get back homeward.
And we thank you for tuning in to the show tonight, episode 75. We're approaching number 100 very quickly, so it's going to be soon. I want to remind everybody to follow us on social media. We just reached our 1,000th follower on Instagram. We are at Beer of the Day site.
Golden slumbers fill your eyes.
We're also on Twitter at Beer of the Day. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheBeerOfTheDay. We're even on YouTube, youtube.com/TheBeerOfTheDay. So follow us on social media and remember to leave your comments on the website. We'll be back next week or 2 weeks. We'll see with another program. We thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next time. For Jeff Miller, I'm Dallas Helliker. This has been the Beer of the Day podcast.